Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death. Crossover, special thanks for all you've done to support our site. This is my first time interviewing this great coach, Mike Mahoney, up at St. Lawrence in upstate. Been coaching there 20 years, man. His overall record is 217-96. Got two ECAC championships, four additional Liberty League championships, 17 times been in the NCAA dance, including 2017 when I went to the semis. Been the Liberty League Coach of the Year six times. Great legacy. If you're not familiar with him, I think you'll get a big kick out of this podcast. We talk about practice plans. Spends a lot of interesting time on full field transition in almost every practice. Talk about dodging, riding, and clearing full field with a purpose. I'm greatly intrigued by this three-man drill that I wrote up in the article section. But without further ado, I think you'll find this really, really interesting, especially a couple of these drills that even after 150 hours of podcast, I have not heard before and can't wait to implement. Lex Coach Mike, LexCoachMike.com. Without further ado, Coach Mahoney.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Another great day broadcasting to you from the international headquarters of LexCoachMike.com. Hey, I'm really thrilled today. Got a guy that you sent me emails on, and I've not done a great job of following up. Got to talk to him on the phone a little bit this week. We got him on today. Coach Mike Mahoney from St. Lawrence. Coach, welcome to LexCoachMike.com.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Great to be with you today.
This is my radio voice, okay, in case you're wondering why I sound so different. I'm all jacked up and excited here.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, as you heard in the bio and stuff, Coach been there 20 seasons, man, and just has been very, very consistent at success. And over the last three seasons especially, kind of, you know, back up there on top and absolutely thrilled to find out a little bit more about how these guys get to where they need to be. Coach, you've been doing this a long time, man. Anything really different that you've kind of evolved or changed in the last 5 years or 6 years compared to the previous 15? Or, I mean, I know the kids are a little different. Guys are running drills a little bit shorter, playing with the sequence of practice. Are you still running those practice templates the way you did before? Have you played some games? Give me a general outline of what goes into thought in the practice planning at St. Lawrence.
Yeah, you know, I think there has been a change. Recently, I do feel like with the emphasis of teams playing a little bit more of an up-tempo style, you know, and we've tried to do that a little bit ourselves, you know, less offense, defense. I think, you know, I came into this, I was a lacrosse player here at St. Lawrence, but also played football and sometimes had that football mentality where, you know, you're breaking it down on the offensive end and then on the defensive end and a little bit more structured probably early on. And I would say more recently we've been a little bit more free-flowing. And at the same time, you know, I think one of the tougher things to do is to convince particularly your midfielders that, hey, you know, we want you to do some things on the offensive end, obviously, but you've got to come back and be a part of our team defensive scheme. And, you know, so to just kind of instill that thought process in our guys has been a big thing that we've looked into, and I think we've made that transition to here recently. You know,
I know you had some great players, but I saw the season average was 44 shots a game, man. That's some pretty up-tempo lacrosse.
Yeah, no, I will say, you know, I give a ton of credit to my assistant Tom Ryan, who's been with me now going into his fifth year. He's had he had a great college career at Bowdoin and then a professional career, played a year or two in the MLL, but a huge Fox background, and you know, that's been something that we've really tried to implement into our offensive sets and, you know, just the, you know, pass down, pick down sort of stuff that I think has made us a little bit more dangerous. And also I think he likes to play a style that allows the guys to give them somewhat of a structure offensively, but not to try to, you know, diagram every play and you go here, you go there. It's, hey, you know, read the play, read the situation. And, you know, we really try to trust our guys to make decisions, intelligent decisions based on time of the game and what the, how the, what situation arises. And I think they've done that. And so we've been happy with that as well.
So coach, what time of day do you practice?
That's a great question. This morning, Monday morning, we practice at 6 a.m. tomorrow we'll practice at 6 p.m. You know, part of the thing that makes us a little bit unique, probably, we have a turf field, but, a lot of our opportunity to go outside in the early part of the season is based on temperatures and, the training room giving us the green light to do that. And, we're fortunate we've got a pretty good indoor facility, if we need to be inside, but we also share that facility with women's lacrosse and softball and baseball. So, we're kind of all over the map, particularly in the first month. And okay. Anytime we can get an opportunity to get outside, we will. But when we're on the turf outside, we're either going to practice 4 to 6 or 6 to 8. We're sharing that with the women's team. And then inside, it could be 6 a.m. It could be 8 p.m., depending on the day.
So, Coach, understanding that the fall practice plan looks a little different than the spring practice plan, is there a general template that you kind of hold to when you do the practice plans? And let me start with a question like this. Do you share the plans with the players, or do you like for them to adjust on the fly?
We'll run through the plan with them, before we start practice, just to kind of get them mentally in tuned. And, one of the things too is our turf field is away from our facility a little bit, so we don't move into our locker room until actually our hockey season ends. We've got a Division I men's and women's hockey program here, so we actually don't move into the closest locker room to our turf until really early or mid-March. So the downside of that is we don't have kind of that opportunity to, say, post a practice plan in the locker room because they may be coming from a totally different facility. But we do want to make sure that they've got an idea of, what our goals are. One of the things that we've tried to do is to work with them a little bit on individual goals as well, so they know going in to a practice, hey, here's some things that I need to get better at, here's some things I'm getting some feedback from the coaches about, and to actually write those down and to think about that, so it's not just, hey, I'm going to practice and practice hard, but is there some specific things that are going to make you better on that particular day? So we try to do that with our guys as much as we can.
Okay. So the kids come out to practice. Let's say it's 4 o'clock. What happens then, Coach?
Well, generally there'll be some pre-practice stuff that we'll want them to do as far as obviously getting the goalies warmed up. We'll give them a couple of shooters to work with, a righty and a lefty usually, so they're getting a thorough workout or a warm-up. We like to do a lot of that individual stuff, even pre-practice. So for defensemen, it may be jumping on a ladder and doing some footwork drills or, other sort of drills with cones and things like that. So they're kind of warmed up or working on some things that they, that maybe we've laid out to them that they need to, pick up in certain situations. For our offensive guys, good opportunity to get on a cage, get some shooting, just get the sticks kind of ready to go. But, so that's what we'll do initially, and then we'll get into an active warm-up or stretch. We usually continue to do some sort of a stick drill. We try to vary that. Like, we don't want to do, I don't know that we ever do line drills, to be honest with you. We'll do some line drills maybe before a game, but it's a star drill. It's what we call a spike passing drill, where they're just getting the ball to the adjacent guy in line as he kind of fires out from the center of a formation. We'll do a weave, the old school weave. We've done that for, 30 years around here, but it's a great way to just get guys up and down the field and get the balls, get the ball out in front of them, kind of running into passes, and it's great for communication as well. So we'll do that as one of our pre-practice drills. So, you know, we'll pick something different every day just to make sure we're ready to go. And then from there, a lot of times it depends on where are we during the week as far as game prep and that sort of thing. But what I like to do, to be honest with you, is to get going with an up and down transition drill right off the bat.
Kind of set the pace right from the get-go.
Exactly, exactly. And just get guys going, and it's just great for tempo. It's great for enthusiasm, and we try to do that fairly early on in most practices.
Coach, are those 3v2, 4v3? How do you like to run those? Or do you vary them up?
Yeah,
you go 6v5.
We spend a lot of time. We'll just call them continuous drills, and so our attack and D are in, you know, at both ends, and then we've got the middies on kind of either side of the box, and then a lot of times it's a 5-on-5 continuous or a 6-on-6 where you know you go into the first shot immediately after the shot the goalie is getting the ball out of the cage and outletting it to a midi, and now they're pushing up the field. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll maybe do something with the guy who took the shot, and let's say he's got to touch the goal line or he's got to go around the cage, so we're trying to create some unsettled situations and some transition, but really focusing on getting that ball head-manned and trying to can we get a 4-on-3? Can we get a 5-on-4? And just keeping the pace pretty high during that period of time.
So that guy who took the shot, in essence, he's now kind of a trailer almost as it comes down. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. He is.
So you start that like 3-on-2, and then you're continually adding, Coach, and building it up, or you just kind of go 5v4 to 5v5 to 6v5?
You know, a lot of times we'll just go, so if we can think of two middies in defensively, two middies in coming down offensively, we're going to create the shot at one end, and then immediately we'll have two middies that are set up in midfield lines essentially on either side of the box. They are now breaking up field. And then those two guys that were on offense are getting back to play defense. So it could be a 5-on-5 if they do a great job getting back. If we do a great job of getting that ball pushed up quickly, you should be able to create a 5-on-4 situation with then that fifth guy coming back late to even up the situation.
And Coach, that's full field? Or, I mean,
full
you're
field.
Running the 100
full
yards?
Full field. Yep, and then it's just continuous. You know, you're just pushing the ball. You're going to go to the first good shooting opportunity, or you're going to go to you throw the ball. If you throw the ball away, then the goalie's immediately going to get a ball out and get the ball pushed up. You know, you're not going to spend a lot of time battling for a loose ball or anything in that situation. Just keeping the ball pushed up and down.
So you kind of build that to 6v6. You let them play a couple of reps, and then you reset.
Yep.
Okay.
And sometimes
you got a nice little running element to it too, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's disguised conditioning, I guess. But you know, the other thing with that, sometimes you can start with three middies breaking and three middies now getting back, so it's a 6-on-6 continuous. So depending on you know what you want to do as far as the pace, and depending on what exactly you're looking to work on, you know, it could be that 4-on-4 continuous, it could be a 5-on-5, it could be a 6-on-6, and or you could build up, you know, again, just depending on that particular day.
So, Coach, when you're in that drill, a middie's a middie pretty much, right? I mean, you're not segregating out the O middies or the B middies.
No.
And the LSMs are playing offense as well?
They are. And that's, you know, another big, when you say the changes, I mean, as you we all recall. I mean, a pole carrying it down and being a part of the offense or setting the pick, and you know, I think we're getting better at that. There's some teams out there that do an unbelievable job, but you know, probably you know, Tufts and some of those places, you know, have done a great job of that. RIT does an unbelievable job with that, with getting their poles involved. So, you know, I think each year you're going to see more and more teams that kind of loosen the reins a little bit and let those poles get involved in the early offense and other facets of the offense as well.
Coach, do you do shooting drills with your poles or your LSMs?
We do. We do.
Yeah.
In fact, we'll do it sometimes with our close defensemen as well.
I agree. I'm all over that.
I think the more comfortable they are, you know, it's something we certainly believe in.
Yeah, me too, man. And we always have poles score a lot of goals. I don't, you know.
Right. Right.
But they got to know where it's going when they shoot it, you know, and that comes through reps and drills and everything else, you know.
Exactly.
All right, man. So we pre-practiced. We came out and stretched. We set the tone of practice with a full field transition drill. Where do we go here, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, probably a next step is we may try to break down, you know, a portion of what we're doing offensively and defensively. You know, a big part of team defense for us, obviously, is the communication component. And so maybe it's a, you know, we'll do a three-on-three kind of slide and recovery with just the middies up top. And we may have, say, one guy behind the cage acting as an attackman, but he's not really live. He's just kind of a ball transfer guy for us. So, you know, if we get that dodge down the alley, we get the slide coming, we get the two slide from the backside, and he doesn't have any sort of throwback, the midfielder doesn't have a throwback option, then he can bang it to that attackman, and really he's just going to push it out
redirect
the backside
yeah.
and redirect it out there. So, you know, that's likely something that we'll do at that stage of the practice, is trying to kind of work those units. The midfielder's doing that, and then maybe at the other end, it's the attack versus a D, kind of three-on-three. You know, if you can just imagine that triangle set, and then we'd have maybe a midi on the high crease, and then another midi up top. And part of why we put those middies in, again, is to transfer the ball, but also for us to, from a defensive standpoint, to be able to have those guys supporting. So if we do need to slide, we've got that support coming down into the paint area to make sure we're protecting that area, not giving them those easy looks right in the gut there.
Coach, I'm really intrigued by this. So when you're running 3v3, kind of a slide and recover drill with your middies,
yeah.
What's the original configuration of those three offensive middies?
So generally,
where do they start on the field?
Yeah, we'll put a midi offensively. We'll put a midi kind of in that high crease area, and then the two other middies, you know, top of the box. So they're creating that triangle look. And then, you know, kind of our base offensive set with that triangle rotation would be, you know, if they can get to the middle, great. You know, hopefully defensively we're playing well enough that we're not allowing an easy dodge to the middle of the field, but, you know, kind of forcing them down the alley, and then we'll get just that follow from the midi up top, and then the crease midi will back out, so they've got some throwback options there, whether it's just, you know, two passes to the backside, or maybe if we're not doing a good job of getting down to the backside crease there, they can skip something through. And obviously their first option is they want to go hard, and if they can create a shot and the slide's late getting there, then we're going to take that shot as well. If none of that's there, and you know, we're kind of too deep to throw back at that point, then he would throw it to that pseudo attackman.
Who's going to redirect it back the other side?
Exactly.
So coach, in that case, let's say the middie's high and outside, and you know, he gives him a little move inside, and he's driving the alley now. That first slide is going to come from the crease guy, and the backside midi is going to slide inside.
Exactly.
Is that what you're working on?
Yep. Yep. You know, the communication of who's hot, where that two slide is coming from, making sure we're, you know, supporting down to the crease from that backside midi. That's kind of a, you know, a critical component of what we're trying to work on there.
Man, I have not done that. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's just kind of, you know, I think breaks down the, you know, the sliding aspect of our defense. It takes the traffic of the attackman being out there, but you can really focus on, particularly for your middies and your offensive middies especially, if they're not comfortable, it really kind of puts them under the microscope a little bit as far as, you know, the tempo of the slide and also, you know, where that help needs to be to make sure we're solid inside out there.
Tempo of the slide. Is that lacrosse talk, Coach? Because I'm trying to pay attention and take notes here as best I can.
Yeah, I would say so.
I love that, man. You're like a lacrosse guy here. Wow. Hey, Coach, are you allowing the middies to integrate some pick play into this look too, or are we mostly working on drives with the ball and the focus is on the slide, not so much a pick or a slip in this setting?
Yeah, not so much in this setting. Okay. You know, occasionally it'll kind of you know, go in that direction, but you know, a lot of the picks that we're setting is more so midfield working with the attack. I mean, we will, don't get me wrong, we'll set some picks on the ball or some off-ball picks, screens, but in this particular case, it's really more about the dodge, the triangle rotation, and then also the defensive emphasis of it all.
Makes a lot of sense. Sorry, taking notes feverishly here. So at the other end of the field, you may be running a similar kind of drill with the attack and the D. Can you share with me the configuration of how you're running that to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, just a real
The redirect guy is now up top, right?
Yep, so we got
the dummy guy. Redirect guy. Well, I mean, not dummy, but I mean the guy that's just there to redirect the ball is in a high crease or up near the top of the box?
Yep, so we'll actually have the three attackmen in, I mean, in a very basic set up, it's going to be an attack at X and then kind of those two wing attackmen. So if I'm driving to the right, basically that attackman who's going to the direction where I'm driving is going to clear through, you know, just creating space, real simple there. We'll put a midi kind of in that high crease area. So you know, he can just kind of read that attackman as well and try to be an option if we don't get that second slide coming down. So part of the reason we have that midi up top is to be a transfer guy, but also from a defensive standpoint, we want those middies who are playing that guy up top to be real comfortable and aware of, hey, we've got a drive happening. I've got to get myself down to that crease area, so we're not giving up that look. Because obviously we're going to have to give something up if we slide, and what we want to give up are those kind of lobs over the top or something that would have to skip through traffic that we can hopefully get our sticks on at that point in time.
So, Coach, the guy that's the dummy redirect midi up top,
yep.
You've got a defensive player on him that's going to help out with a slide down if that guy comes from X hard?
Yes. Yep. And then we'll decide kind of depending on what we're looking to do defensively. You know, we may come from the crease, and if we do, we'll, you know, he's going to come down heavy to the crease there to take that look away. We could potentially come across the crease, you know, kind of that coma slide.
Right.
And with that being the case, that man up top defensively is still going to get to the crease, and then the crease defenseman would bump down to the backside pipe to take that cross crease look away. But we want to make sure we're real secure defensively, obviously right on the crease, but then the backside attackman on that backside pipe would be our next thought. And then
love it.
Anything we give up would be over the top for, you know, a perimeter shot, but it's gonna give us some time, hopefully, if they're lobbying or to either recover and get out to that with a pass up top, or you want to throw it through some sticks, then, you know, we'll take a chance that we can get something knocked down, deflected, or picked off possibly.
So, Coach, in the attack and the defense scheme of this 3v3 with a dummy or a redirect back to the weak side guy, that Nitty up top, is he similar to the other configuration? We're not really going to let him go to the cage. We're going to let him redirect the ball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I love this idea, man. Where have you been all my life?
and it's really one of those things where, you know, he's not going to take a ton of step-down shots or anything like that. He's really just trying to, you know, be an outlet redirect guy. Keep the ball, you know, alive. But really the initiation is happening from those attackmen down low.
Yeah, the core of the drill is attack movement and defensive slides down low.
Exactly.
As I understand it. Although we do allow a D midi in this drill that can help out occasionally. And if he were to go down, obviously, his guy's going to be wide open. So they bang it up to the, for lack of, I hate the word dummy, man. Let me find a different word for that.
Right.
Let's call it outlet, for lack of a better description.
Yeah,
so he's going to bang it up to the
transfer guy. You know, he's just going to transfer from one side to the other.
Gets the ball, the D midi presumably is going to come back out and kind of dummy guard him, and we're back into the drill the way it was set up.
Absolutely. He's going to close out on him. He's going to, you know, try to think about his angles of approach. And even though, you know, again, he's not live downhill, we still want to be disciplined and consistent with that approach out to him.
So, Mike, how long are these guys on the field for? You let them run like two or three reps with a group before you switch them out, or is it quick reps, in and out, in and out, in and out?
Yeah, I mean, we'll give them two, three probably max, but we want to keep it rolling pretty good, you know, and it's not an extended period of time, but it's, at the same time, it's
right.
Long enough sometimes to get a couple of balls in, so you're not always feeling like you're in you know, transition mode of getting guys in and out. They don't really get comfortable that way.
Well, and yeah, I mean, there's kind of a purpose to each, if you will, but the focus here is on the defense slides. The communication is a huge factor, and the O just kind of staying in their motion principles and keeping their head up and recognizing where the slides are coming from.
Exactly.
I love it, Mike.
Yeah, it's a
good
drill.
I've
got to tell you, man,
150 or 60 hours, I've not heard that one.
You know, it's just nice as kind of breaking down the overall, you know, 6-on-6, whether it's offensively or defensively. And to be honest with you, I think it really helps as a coach just to be able to focus your attention on that smaller group.
Right,
whether you're,
I couldn't agree more.
Offensively or defensively. So it works out well.
All right, now comes the $65 question from Lax Coach Mike. You ready?
Yeah.
I mean, understanding that I love your fraternity and understanding in another life I wish I could be you, okay, even though I'm 61 and I probably won't pay a chance. At the end of the day, do you got a cool name for this drill?
We just call it a Y drill. So if you can think of the configuration with the three middies up top and that attackman behind.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of we call that a Y drill.
In other words, you're just like every other great coach. You got boring names for your drills. I get it.
Yeah, man. I apologize.
You're not alone. I mean, you're standing shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of other USILA Coach of the Year guys that are equally as mundane in their naming process, I might add.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's some good guys out there. I'm happy to stand with them, that's for sure. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's always, oh, yeah, that one we call the Army drill. Why do you call that? Well, the guy that was here as an assistant coach had another guy that was with Alberici, and they ran that like 20 years ago. Or, you know, I can remember when Coach Emmer ran that drill. That's why we call it the Army drill. Okay.
Yep. No question. no rhyme or reason sometimes, but...
Hey, I'm going to tell you what. I very rarely hear stuff that I haven't heard, brother, and you hit the nail on the head there. That was awesome. So now we've focused on a little bit of defensive station work, and I understand these all change day to day, Coach. What are we now? Maybe 45 minutes in or 50 minutes into practice, roughly?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay, where do we go next?
You know, the other thing that we'll do, and again, probably more so in preseason than once you get into the heart of the season, but, you know, I think we always like to test guys a little bit with some one-on-ones or, you know, just kind of evaluation. Certainly early on, you know, we'll do in our preseason here, we'll do some one-on-ones, two-on-twos,
right,
where we're just trying to get a sense of who are going to be our guys and, you know, what they need to continue to work on. And sometimes, obviously, they got to play as a team, but sometimes you got to put them out on an island a little bit too and just see, hey, get to the cage, and, you know, so that's something that we're not afraid to do.
Coach, I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at you. I just had this memory flash across my forehead, man. And you know, we first started the website project. I think we were maybe, you know, 2 years in out of our nine or on the air or whatever. And I was doing a podcast with Lars Tiffany. Okay.
Yep.
And we were talking about kind of the influx of redirecting the ball topside instead of redirecting it all the time through X, and
right.
You know, more and more, the flow of the game was changing. I mean, it was not guys at X and cutters as much as it was redirecting the ball strong side, weak side, and traditionally that was done behind, and now it's done up top, and somehow we got in this esoteric philosophical conversation
right,
about the modifications in offense, you know. And then there's like a real ugly, pregnant pause in the podcast. You know, and when you're listening to these things, you know, as an MP3 file or something like that, a 4 or 5 second pregnant pause sounds like I hung up the phone. You know, I mean, it just sounds like a long time. So anyway, it was like 4 or 5 seconds go by, and then the inevitably esoteric Lars Tiffany says, but, you know, we could talk about this stuff all day long, but, you know, I'm thinking at the end of the day, nothing happens till somebody beats somebody anyway.
Right. Yep, that's an accurate statement for sure.
You know, and it was like out of the mouths of babes, you know,
yep,
comes this tremendously philosophical statement. And, I mean, you know, after that, you know, me personally, you know, even if we're running our Y drills in a 4v4 setup or something like that, you know, we always put in a segment where you're not allowed to pass until you drive.
Right,
you know?
Right.
All because of that comment like 7 or 8 years ago sticks in my head, you know. Or,
yep.
I mean, I'll take 1 or 2 drills a day and, you know, don't dodge, just drive. You know
right,
what I mean? I
right,
don't come up to your defender and do 36 dance moves. You know, run by him. You know,
that's
or
right,
if he overcommits, you know, come back. But whatever it turns out to be.
Yeah.
Coach, any little nifty tips for the listeners on the 1v1s? I mean, are you hitting a guy with a pass and or maybe even two passes, pass, dodge, kind of the old upstate philosophy? Do you have 2 or 3 ways you kind of vary your 1v1s? Or what do you do rather than just start a guy in a corner for the guys that are coaching high school ball and have generally just had 4 lines and said, okay, your turn, go one-on-one to make
right,
it a little more game realistic?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always dodge off the pass. I mean, I think
right,
you definitely want to do that.
And it's such a big point, you know. Or I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's rare, and I'll tell you, I don't want our guys ever, even if they're attackmen picking the ball up on the end line, you know, just picking the ball up and going. You know, at that point, the whole, you know, all eyes of the defense are on that attackman, and the defense is, you know, supporting that side, and so I really feel like they've got to be comfortable catching a ball, kind of squaring up, and then attacking that defenseman. The other thing that I would say is to, like you said, not just the corners, to come from different parts of the formation. You know, so can you be a wing dodging team? You know, can you come out of a 1-4-1, or are you playing, you know, from a defensive side of things, are you playing a team that, that dodges a little bit more from the wings, and you've got to be comfortable, I think, defending and attacking from those different areas. Is it more of an X attack team where you've got to be comfortable forcing them one way defensively and you know, making those sort of adjustments based on body position and approach angle, those sort of things. But to just get that box and just kind of go from those corners, I think in some ways you're doing a disservice to the guys that way.
You know, you said some really cool things there, and I think one of them was a hidden gem. You know, there's a guy down here that's a real close friend of mine, Pete Mandanero. I don't know if you ever met him. He started the program at Piedmont.
Yeah,
Like
I have met
a handful of years ago, you know, and with what they had to work there, he did a really good job. He was a great high school coach down here in Atlanta at Lassiter. And,
right.
And I'll never forget, I'm sure he'll listen to this, and I've told him before, but, you know, he ran a lot, probably 30 or 40% of his offense, you know, from the wing. And if it wasn't a wing dodge, it was cutters and off-ball picks from the wing. Not always just in the crease, you know, but even out of an open set you know, maybe even an umbrella set. And, you know, I knew him as a personal friend. So, you know, when we play them, we would focus a lot on that. But when I would watch film on their games, even at Piedmont, you know, they used to give people fits just because so many of the traditional coaches, especially at the high school level, and I think at the college level too, you know, were running those slide packages top to bottom or bottom to top.
Sure.
And when it got in that gray area,
yeah,
you know, like if you were a coach that slid adjacent down from behind but slid crease up from up top, you know, when you get in that gray area of coming laterally, you can mess a lot of people up.
Absolutely.
But to your point, you know, the first thing is, can your team handle it? Or are they comfortable, you know, in that setting? And the first couple times you start running these dodges or initiate, you know, even a 4v4 or even initiating that 3v3 drill, you know, from the wing, it may look a little bit ugly and uncomfortable, but you know, I would encourage coaches to stay with it for a couple of days just to see if you have some potential there, because you could really mess up, you know, some teams with that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, I think it's like you were saying with that gray area. If you can put some indecision on where that slide's coming from, that could be, you know, the step or two steps that you need to start creating, and then you know, they get into a rotation late, and at that point, you've got yourself some good offense attacking the cage. So
and the other thing that happens is two guys slide to the ball.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times, just because they want to err on the side of doing the right thing. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, nobody's not paying attention or anything. But and then the other part of that is finding a guy that can dodge comfortably from the wing is kind of a unique animal, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, I think it's something that not everyone is comfortable with. Sometimes guys will get to a shooting position, but they're not willing to create that angle. You know, we'll see some guys that'll fade a little bit and, you know, settle for a shot that maybe doesn't hit the cage short side, you know, because for whatever reason, if they're a little contact or you know, not able or willing to get to the front of the cage. But you know, I think it's something that if you have some guys that are comfortable there, then that 1-4-1 set or, you know, different ways, or even if they're starting from the top, but they want to carry a guy down to the wing and then, you know, dodge from there, they can create some good opportunities for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for everybody, but, and you got to have a guy that can do that. But at the end of the day, you know, I think offensive defenses are so accustomed to looking to finish at the backside pipe. You know, the finish on that might be topside middie creeping in on a skip pass even.
Yeah.
You know, as the other guys, you know, the two slide or the other guys drop down into the hub or the crease area or whatever your nomenclature is, you know, at that time.
Yep, exactly.
Good stuff. Let's keep going, Coach.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we want to, you know, one of the things that we want to do is we'll spend – And more so when we get outside here because of the space, but the riding and clearing, I mean, we're getting more opponents, and we've tried to implement it to a certain extent, and I think we're trying to build a comfort level with it, but from a riding and clearing side of things, being a little bit more aggressive with the ride, you know, whether it's some 10-man ride, and you know, depending on where you are with the goalie, is he comfortable and athletic enough to get out of the goal and help you from that standpoint, but also clearing the ball against that 10-man ride is a huge component. So, you know, we like to spend most days to spend some time on both aspects of riding and clearing.
Yeah, I mean, the stats last year are really pretty good, Coach. I mean, the clearing percentage for 2017 was .856. You got to be impressed with my research now, aren't you?
I
mean,
I am very impressed. You must have a research department that does all that stuff for you.
Yeah, we do. Let me turn around. I'll introduce you to him. That happened to me at the airport about 2 weeks ago. I go to get on this flight in L.A., and, you know, they wouldn't take my ticket at the kiosk. And I'm going, what? You know? And so I got to wait in line. I get to the desk, and I said, they wouldn't, you know, something was wrong at the kiosk. Said I had to get in line. And the guy said, yeah, Mr. Mutzel. He said, your ticket's for tomorrow.
Oh,
and I said, oh, God, that asshole that books my tickets always screws up. You know, and the guy's like turning green, like a 26-year-old kid behind the counter, you know. And I started laughing. I said, you want to meet the jerk? And he said, yeah. And I turned around 360, and I said, here he is. This is a jerk that booked that ticket on the wrong day.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and he said, and he told me, you know, for $75, we can make it all better. And I gave him the finger and went and sat in the airport for 24 hours. No, just kidding.
Geez.
Anyway, but I do like the ride percentage, Coach. 787 is probably 6 or 7 points better than the NCAA average. So obviously you're doing something on rides that is manifesting itself in some success.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is just it starts with effort, really having your attackman initially to buy in and say, hey, your job is more than just finishing or controlling the tempo of what we're trying to do offensively. Like you got to take pride in being a complete player, and you know we really work hard on that and try to instill that mentality. And you know it's not necessarily any sort of pressure ride from the standpoint of a 10-man ride or that sort of thing. It's just effort, you know, going till they get to the midfield line and getting guys turned back and knowing if there's opportunities to, you know, maybe double a ball or something to that effect. But just kind of being aware and working hard, and I think that combination gives you a chance to get the ball on the ground and get going the other way.
Hey, Coach, I got two personal questions for you.
Yes.
Personal for me, not personal to you. And I invite the listeners here just to talk amongst themselves for a second. I got a couple questions for Coach. Have you ever run into a situation in 20 years where you got an attackman that really should be a starter, but the guy just doesn't have the feet to ride effectively, and you got to make a decision as to whether or not to play him or play your number four maybe that is almost as good offensively but much more aggressive riding? Seems like every 5 or 6 years I run into that scenario, and we're dealing with smaller rosters. How many guys you got on your roster? I'm looking at some of these D3 rosters the last 4 or 5 years, like 65 guys.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we're not fully set with our roster for this year, but we'll be in the high 40s, I would guess. Last year we were a couple more than that. You know, the thing is there's just so many good high school players out there that want to play college lacrosse, and you want to work and develop them. You know, at the same time, they've obviously got to buy into that team-first mentality because they could be down the line on a depth chart, and, you know, you've got to make sure that that's not going to be a distraction to the team. So,
yeah, a few years ago, we were playing Liberty when I was coaching at Auburn, and I stuck around an extra day because the next day Lynchburg was playing Stevenson.
Yeah.
You know? And I've interviewed both coaches. I've got to know Kadelka really well. I'm a pretty strong Christian, and he's a Christian. And when they came out to warm up, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was like watching Rory Whipple at Tampa. You know,
right.
It was like 2,000 players on the field, you know.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, afterwards I asked Steve, I said, what do you got in your roster? And he said, like, 72.
Right.
And I'm going, holy moly, you know. I mean,
Yeah.
Not even I know how to keep 72 guys busy at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the only...
Here's my second personal question for you.
Sure.
Do you work on double teams with your attack? Do you have drills where you double team with your attack, trying to maximize the fact that they do show a lot of effort and you do get an opportunity to trap or double team somebody up there, you know, between the restraining line and the midfield line on your clearing side of the field? I rarely get a lot of positive responses from coaches when I interview them. My teams spend a fair amount of time on it with our attack working on double teams.
Yep.
Just kind of curious. We got to let the listeners back in on the podcast here in a second, but that's my second personal question for you.
Right. No, I think we do. Probably not as much as we should, but we will do some stuff where guys are running the alleys. You know, we'll have some alleys set up, whether you're using the edge of the box to the sideline or just setting some up with cones where the attackmen are using the sideline, knowing that
yeah.
you know they've got help there, or you know potentially getting a second guy involved and trying to create a double from that standpoint. But you know, in some ways, it's less that we work on it as much technically as just getting guys to get there and then you know being physical and working with each other.
Yeah, I like. I'm a little different, man. I put the stick in the outside shoulder of the sideline side with the attackman. And, you know, we work on rolling that guy back into a double all the time.
Do you?
Especially if we've identified the second or third pole, you know,
that
is the weakest carrier. I mean, at the high school level, you know, there usually is a weaker carrier,
sure.
you know, at the poles. When you get in the NCAA tournament, you probably don't face too many.
Right.
You know, but still, that effort. You know, once you extend the effort, you know, there is kind of a science to double teaming that pole. You know, we call it the V drill. We keep sticks, make it look like a V. You know, on the outside shoulder, and then we just slam the stick down as best we can. Anyway.
Yep.
All right, man. So now we're out of riding and clearing. Where are we going now?
Then we're probably into some. Again, if we're in season, you know, some more 6-on-6 stuff. You know, some look stuff, so we'll break up a little bit offensively and defensively.
Right.
So that's why, you know, it's always important to get the middies in the kind of the defensive mindset, those old middies in some of those other drills, because then there may be a time when we really say, hey, you know, we're working on our game plan against school Team X, and this is kind of what we're looking to do, and we still try to cycle those guys through, you know, the old middies playing some defense and being a part of that, but really at that point the emphasis is more on, you know, our 6-on-6 offense versus an opponent, and then our 6-on-6 defense versus opponent, and you know, we'll do that at both ends of the field, and that's likely what we'll do at that stage of the game.
Okay.
You know, the other thing is sometimes we'll try to, you know, find when you get to like man up and man down, that sort of thing, we'll try to insert that in different times during the practice. You know, whether it's we're in a full field situation, you call a penalty and say, okay, let's get the man up going there. We may do some man up and man down in a specific segment of the practice. But at the same time, I think if you can do that when it's not, hey, we're going to do 10 man up plays right now and versus the defense, because I think you lose a little bit of the, maybe the focus and, you know, particularly from a defensive standpoint, I think it's tough to just have that hammered over and over again. So if you can do it a little bit more in a game-like situation, I think that can be helpful.
Yeah, we opened the dialogue talking about what's changed. I think that's definitely something that's changed, you know. I mean, I find more and more coaches, probably 80% of the guys we talk to, Mike, you know, are integrating man up maybe twice in practice, you know, a minute and a 30-second penalty, or maybe just a 30-second penalty, and then bang, right back into a 4v3, you know.
Right.
And coaching-wise, you know, the listeners have heard me say before, like, I do a podcast, you know, and married to the greatest tippy lacrosse chick wife of all time for 39 years, you know, and she'll say, oh, man, I was the guy from St. Louis. I said, man, he was awesome. And she'll say, you don't seem too excited. And I'm going, no, man, he had the 3-on-3 drill with a redirect guy. I should have been doing that 10 years ago. It makes so much sense. You know, and that's the same way I felt about integrating the man up, man down into practice versus,
right.
you know, traditionally everybody goes into the locker room except for man up, man down, like, you know, when you and I started playing.
Right,
and,
right.
And you did man up, man down. It just makes so much more sense, and the kids appreciate it, you know. And that minute
yep.
and a half, or even if you run 2 or 3 minutes, the other guys get a quick drink, bang. I usually don't go into a new drill. I usually go right back into the drill I was in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to make it like an interruption, you got to adjust your mindset and then right back into what you were focusing
sure.
on before.
Sure. That's absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So now where we go? Are we doing full field now?
Yeah, I mean, we'll do full field, and we'll do usually different points of emphasis, so it's not just straight, hey, we're going to face off in scrimmage.
Right.
It's going to be you know, maybe it's a, we call it a rapid fire face off where we're facing off, you know, essentially there's 30 seconds left in a quarter, a half, a game, and we've got to create a scoring opportunity or stop a scoring opportunity at that point in time. And you get that 30 seconds and it doesn't happen, then you face off again. So we're working, obviously, the repetition of face-off work, but also kind of that mindset, all right, we want a face-off or we lost a face-off, and where are we as far as game situation goes? You know, we spend a lot of time in practice kind of timing the different segments of it, and also how can we make this as game-like as possible, going back to what you're
Absolutely.
Saying with the man up, man down. Okay, 30 seconds down by a goal, 30 seconds up by a goal, you know, all those different situations that just gets guys in the right frame of mind for that situation. So, you know, if you come across it in an actual game, you've prepared for it, and it's not a shock to the system.
Well, and I think, you know, for the varsity and the JV guys, you know, they listen to this part of the podcast, and they're like, I don't have enough guys to do that, you know. Even if you bring the cages up 8 or 9 yards and run 2 attack and 2 D on each side, I think the other hidden benefit of that is the kids really begin, kids at my level, young men at your level, now that I'm back in high school, but you know, the appreciation for understanding what 30 seconds actually is on the field.
Right.
You know, you know, if you run that drill the way Coach described it, you know, pretty soon the kids have an internal clock almost, you know, where
sure.
they all start to understand that I'm probably 15 or 18 seconds in. I don't need to go to the cage this second if I can get it back to the weak side and we can come
right.
down or pass down, pick down or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you can take that panic out of it, you know.
That's why those game situations, you know, with I love what you're doing there with the little clock on the field, I think are so absolutely important.
Yep. No, we've and that's been something we've kind of transitioned to the last couple of years as well, is just trying to, hey, the more game-like we can make it, I think that's gonna pay off, pay huge dividends when you actually get to those situations. You know, when you think about a guy like Bill Belichick and the Patriots, that's why they're so good in a lot of ways, is they're looking into those different, the smallest situations, and at least they've got a game plan for it when it arises.
Hey, you know, I put it on my website, but it was like in November, back before our traffic really starts to pick up, or I mean, right now our traffic on the website is, you know, getting close to the season, really starting to escalate up. And I don't know if everybody heard it. It's a good reminder from you. I need to put it back in. Have you listened to any of those podcasts that Rabel's doing? If you Google Paul Rabel,
yep.
he's doing like entrepreneurial, business, social media kind of podcasts with guys.
Yep.
But he's also done one with Belichick.
Oh, really?
And it's fascinating because of Belichick's connection with Hopkins and Petro. And,
right.
you know, by association, if you will, you know, his relationship with Rabel. You know, it's not anything near a Belichick press conference, Coach.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, when he's talking to Belichick about how they develop players, you're getting honest and genuine responses back.
That'd be great to hear.
You know,
yeah.
and where the origin of do your job and how he plays that in.
Yeah.
It's like a 40-minute podcast, if I remember right.
Okay.
And I've listened to it 2 or 3 times. I would encourage the listeners, if you Google Paul Rabel – podcasts. They're all free.
Right.
It'll give you a list of those. But the one with Petro is pretty good, but it's more of a history, genuine interest about lacrosse thing, about, you know, when Rabel played for him. But the one with Belichick is fascinating. If you study the science of coaching,
that's great.
Yeah, I'll, really, really cool stuff.
Be sure to look into that. Appreciate the tip there.
Oh, now you're patronizing me. Isn't that nice?
Not at all.
Oh, my gosh. Coach, is there, let me ask you two questions. We'll wrap up. God, an hour goes fast, doesn't it?
It does, but all good.
Hey, listen, man, two questions. You know, when I talk to other coaches preparing for the podcast about you, they used one word about your team to describe your team. I heard two or three times. Very mature is what I heard. And, you know, some of that comes from the prep school guys, you know, that they come to St. Lawrence and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, I hear big, strong, and mature, you know, is and by that strong lacrosse acumen, I hear from guys that when your peers describe your program, that's the kind of things that they say.
Yeah.
Is there something when you get that crop in, or, you know, you go through practices this week and you ever drive home and go, man, I wish those high school coaches would just spend a little more time focusing on blank?
You know, it's...
I know you're getting the players with a higher skill set than you used to get them.
Right.
In a macro sense, you know, across the board.
Yeah.
But is there something that you still find that you got to kind of go back and go to fundamentals 101? I know footwork comes up a lot in these kind of dialogues. But I'm just curious, after, you know, your great legacy that you've got there at St. Lawrence and the years you spent there and all the success you've had, you like this patronization, huh? I'm really buttering you up. I'm just curious, you know, is there something that you see season after season that you wish the kids were maybe a little bit better prepared when they come in?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a process. I mean, the one thing is, you know, I think we do have guys that are strong and physical, but I think you'd love to see guys that have been exposed to the strength and conditioning side of things by the time they get here.
Interesting.
You know, there's some guys that kind of bring that with them because they've been fortunate enough to be in a program, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they have a personal trainer that gets them ready. But you know, I think the guys that come in and they've worked on the off-season stuff, the lifting and the agility. They put themselves in a better position to compete. I think the guys that come in, they could have the greatest skill in the world, but if they're you know, not able to push a guy off the ball defensively, or if they're not able to, you know, create some space for themselves from an offensive standpoint, then it takes a little bit more time for them to get fully in the mix. From a competitive standpoint, and to kind of work their way up the depth chart, but you know, really, just those fundamentals from a shooting standpoint too. You know, I think it's amazing the guys that we see will just kind of still fall away when they're shooting, or you know, drop the head of their stick when they can just, you know, shoot it the old school overhand and put themselves in a better position. So. I mean, I think it's just the fundamentals, and I think the high school coaches do a great job. It's now getting those guys to buy into that. But that edge could be, hey, if I can bench press my body weight 10 times by the time I get to the spring of my freshman year, I'm gonna be in a better position to maybe make some contributions that particular year.
I'm laughing again, man. I got these thoughts across my forehead. I think I've had like three of those calls in the last 3 years, you know, where a kid that played for me went to a program with some stature, you know, regardless, D1, D2, D3.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a dialogue, you know, with the coach, the guy would call me up and say, did you ever play him in a crease, or what do you think about this? And I'll say, how's he doing? And they always say, he sent me a kid that can't bench his own weight.
Right, right, yeah.
You know? And you're going... Yeah, man. You know, in especially on the, you know, the travel circuit. You know,
sure.
We had a team from Georgia that won the national championship a couple years ago, and you know, I didn't, you know, never even entered my radar, Mike, to be honest with you. You know, encouraging those kids to lift and condition. you know, in the summer because it was predominantly, you know, transition lacrosse. You know,
right.
Bang it up, bang it down, move it, make saves, win face-offs, and go play.
Right, right.
So. Hey, listen, I want to be respectful of your time here. We talked a little bit before we started, and we got all these links on the site. You know, for a guy that has, you know, been paid a lot of money and coached a lot of great players, probably four in the MLL, I mean, just, you know, I understand the struggle that kids have with the prices that some of these people are paying for travel ball now, and, you know, 3Ds here in Atlanta, and some of those programs are $2,000 or $3,000, man.
Right.
I can remember when my daughter played, and she played in college, you know, on a travel volleyball team, and it was like $800, and Alice were going, and I are going, okay, it's $800, but it's really $1,600, you know, that we need to stash away,
yeah.
You know, for hotel rooms and meals and or whatever, you know, airfare to Denver or whatever it turns out to be for Abby. So we've started to, you know, I get a lot of questions from coaches on travel ball and stuff like that, emails, you know, and we've really become huge proponents of the prospect camp.
Yeah.
You know, because there's just something around about being around that coach's personality. You know, some coaches are still F-bomb laden guys, you know, and if the kid's not going to react to that, he should know that.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
If the campus is smaller than his high school, he should spend a day or two there and recognize that before he goes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I know you got a prospect camp coming up in June. We will have all those links on the site. Thursday, June 21st on campus there. And then the instructional camp, is that overnight or is that like a day camp, Coach?
It's either or, you know, so a lot
okay.
of the local kids will come for the day camp portion of it, but we also have an overnight camp as well. And, you know, that's, I will say both boys and girls, I'm involved in the overall camp, but, you know, our women's coach, Hannah Corkery, is kind of our field instructor for the girls' side of things. So, you know, thinking of families with a son and a daughter both in the game, and maybe they want to do something together, you know. That's
oh, look at you, family camp week. I love it.
That's right.
Nice, Coach. Very nice. In 9 years, you're the first coach to mention family in connection with lacrosse camps. Nice. Very nice. Kudos. I applaud you. If you could see me right now, I'm on like both knees bended to the phone, man.
So, yeah, you know, keep us in mind. And, you know, to your point about the prospect camp, it's guys that come through here. We're up in Canton, New York, and I think it's a beautiful place, but it's got to be an intentional decision for someone to say, hey, I want to check out a place like St. Lawrence. It's not like they're just passing through in most cases, you know. So to have them up on our campus and get a chance to work with our staff and see things from that standpoint is it's always a lot of fun either way. If it ends up that St. Lawrence is the place for them or not, we always enjoy that. So keep
well,
that
it's a gorgeous campus
well.
From what I understand. I mean, I've not been there.
Yeah, we feel really fortunate.
And from what I understand, the academic reputation is real strong as well. So
absolutely.
Good stuff. So, Coach, can we not wait another 9 years to have you back on LexCoachMike.com?
That sounds great. Let's do it. It's got to be within the next – well, I'll let you make the call on that, see how it goes. But I really appreciate you reaching out, and I wish everyone the best of luck this spring and moving forward. And we'll definitely connect before 9 years, that's for darn sure.
I hope so, man. Hey, Coach, stay on the line with me here 1 second, and we'll sign off. I think I'm greatly intrigued, and I will. I guarantee you I will put it in this week sometime, on the redirect guy on the 3v3 and the focus on the slide package.
Yep.
I love that stuff. I love the practice sequence, but I think that's probably where I'll go with the article. For those of you that are listening, I'll have schematics and stuff up on that. Coach, I can't thank you enough, man. It's I just really enjoyed talking to you. I enjoyed talking to you off the air. I enjoyed talking to you on the air. Can't believe that I'm such a jackass that I haven't done it earlier. Anyway, with that being said, special thanks to this great coach. Special thanks to all of you. This is Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. Until next time, remember, everybody, it's an unbelievable responsibility and a blessing we have interfacing with these young people. Take it very seriously every day. Until next time, LaxCoachMike, LaxCoachMike.com.